Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots, and partially solar-powered community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's good to get some notebook paper and pen so you can take notes during the show. First, we look at some debt-related news and facts for the week from an article in the Huffington Post by Elizabeth Warren called America Without a Middle Class. Can you imagine an America without a strong middle class? If you can, would it still be America as we know it? Today, one in five Americans is unemployed, underemployed, or just plain out of work. One in nine families can't make the minimum payment on their credit cards. One in eight mortgages is in default or foreclosure. One in eight Americans is on food stamps. More than 120,000 families are filing for bankruptcy every month. The economic crisis has wiped more than $5 trillion from pensions and savings, has left family balance sheets upside down, and threatens to put 10 million homeowners out on the street. Families have survived the ups and downs of economic boons and busts for a long time, but the fall behind during the busts has gotten worse, while the surge ahead during the booms has stalled out. In the boom of the 1960s, for example, median family income jumped by 33%, adjusted for inflation. But the boom of the 2000s resulted in an almost imperceptible 1.6% increase for the typical family. While Wall Street executives and others who own lots of stock celebrated how good the recovery was for them, middle-class families were left empty-handed. The crisis facing the middle class started more than a generation ago. Even as productivity rose, the wages of the average fully employed male have been flat since the 1970s. But core expenses kept going up. By the early 2000s, families were spending twice as much, again, adjusted for inflation, on mortgages than they did a generation ago, for a house that was, on average, only 10% bigger and 25 years older. They also had to pay twice as much to hang on to their health insurance. To cope, millions of families put a second parent into the workforce. But higher housing and medical costs combined with new expenses for childcare, the cost of a second car to get to work, and higher taxes combined to squeeze families even harder. Even with two incomes, they tightened their belts. Families today spend less than they did a generation ago on food, clothing, furniture, appliances, and other flexible purchases, but it hasn't been enough to save them. Today's families have spent all their income, have spent all their savings, and have gone into debt to pay for college, to cover serious medical problems, and just to stay afloat a little while longer. Through it all, families never asked for a handout from anyone, especially Washington. They were left to go on their own, working harder, squeezing nickels, and taking care of themselves. But their economic boats have been taking on water for years, And now the crisis has swamped millions of middle-class families. The contrast with big banks could not be sharper. While the middle class has been caught in an economic vice, the financial industry that was supposed to serve them has prospered at their expense. Consumer banking, selling debt to middle-class families, has been a gold mine. Borrowing banking has given way to creative banking, and the industry has generated tens of billions of dollars annually in fees made possible by deceptive and dangerous terms buried in the fine print of opaque, incomprehensible, and largely unregulated contracts. And when various forms of this creative banking triggered economic crisis, the banks went to Washington for a handout. All the while, top executives kept their jobs and retained their bonuses, even though the tax dollars that supported the bailout came largely from middle-class families, from people already working hard to make ends meet. The beneficiaries of those tax dollars are now lobbying Congress to preserve the rules that had let those huge banks feast off the middle class. Pundits talk about populist rage as a way to trivialize the anger and fear coursing through the middle class. But they have it wrong. Families understand with crystalline clarity that the rules they have played by are not the same rules that govern Wall Street. They understand that no American family is too big to fail. They recognize that business models have shifted and that big banks are pulling out all the stops to squeeze families and boost revenues. They understand that their economic security is under assault and that leaving consumer debt effectively unregulated does not work. Families are ready for change. According to polls, large majorities of Americans have welcomed the Obama administration's new Consumer Financial Protection Agency. The CFPA would be answerable to consumers, not to banks and not to Wall Street. The agency will have the power to end tricks and traps pricing and to start leveling the playing field so that consumers have the tools they need to compare prices and manage their money. The response of the big banks has been to swing into action against the agency. They fought with all their lobbying might to keep business as usual. They are pulling out all the stops to kill the agency before it starts. And if those practices crush millions more families, who cares? So long as the profits stay high and the bonuses keep coming. America today has plenty of rich and super rich, but it has far more families who did all the things right, but who still have no real security. Going to college and finding a good job no longer guarantee economic safety. Paying for a child's education and setting aside enough for a decent retirement have become distant dreams. Tens of millions of once secure middle-class families now live paycheck to paycheck, watching as their debts pile up and worrying about whether a pink slip or a bad diagnosis will send them hurtling off and over an economic cliff. America without a strong middle class? Unthinkable. But the one solid foundation is shaking. And that is an article in the Huffington Post by Elizabeth Warren, the Leo Gottlieb Professor of Law at Harvard, who is currently the chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel. And if all goes right and for the middle class, she will be the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now we're going to go back to who is obviously my favorite pragmatic scholar, Elizabeth Warren. We've been studying the two-income trap, why middle-class parents are going broke. which is a book by Elizabeth and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi. I start this portion of the show with an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in this program are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Warren and her daughter Amelia, two of America's leading champions for debtors. I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. And you can go to all of the shows that I have produced for Crew FM by visiting the archives at www.kruufm.com under Life and Debt, and enjoy a full education on various issues regarding debt and ways to heal yourself of financial problems. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been discussing Professor Warren's financial fire drill, which is really to help protect people in advance of the debt problem taking over their lives. But we started last week with the reality of the house already being on fire. In other words, it's too late to practice and protect oneself against the debt conflagration in one's life. So what about those families for whom the fire drill comes too late? Professor Warren points out that these are the ones most often ignored by advice peddlers, and they are the most likely to be victimized by unscrupulous creditors. In fact, that's the group to whom Professor Warren's book, The Two Income Trap, was dedicated, to offer these people a few direct words of advice and comfort. Her first point is avoid the blame game. With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, it's tempting to beat yourself up about the smarter choices you might have made. And I see this every single day with every client that I have. People hold on deeply to the sense of failure and frustration for being in the financial predicament they find themselves. In some way, it's totally out of perspective relative to the facts that actually created the debt problems, lost job, divorce, death in the family, an accident, etc. Things that are often related to the economy at large, over which my clients had no control whatsoever. But they still look back and say, why did this happen and how could I and should I have prevented it? But as Professor Warren underscores, if you are like nearly 90% of the families in financial trouble, you got that way because something lousy happened to you. Maybe your business went under, maybe your husband left you, or you got too sick to work, as I just said. Oftentimes, people make decisions that they did in order to help, for example, take care of their family. And in the opinion of people like Professor Warren and myself, you have nothing to feel guilty about. It's very important psychologically to go easy on yourself, because the truth is, the creditors are not going to go easy on you. And there is this very unhealthy psychological overlay that the media and these people on cable, who are either the ultra-wealthy themselves or controlled by the ultra-wealthy, spin to create these kinds of feelings of guilt and failure in people. It's very important to recognize that regardless of what created these conditions in the present, there is a body of law there to protect you and to help you start over. And when I say protect and help you, I do not mean only financially, because when one starts dealing with these financial issues, one's health can deteriorate very quickly as the stress goes up in one's life. We don't sleep, we're not eating properly, we're on edge, and it creates bad vibes in our personal relationships and at work and on and on. So it really is a very volatile situation psychologically. So it is important that from our own side, we just drop that nonsense. We do not take the blame for what has occurred. And that's even if we did make a bad choice or a foolish choice or a wrong choice, that's probably only one element in the whole financial picture, and it wasn't the entire story, because it is still that our choices are made in the context of the whole faltering and unhealthy economy. In other words, go easy on yourself. Let it go and deal with what exists right now and how to get out of it. So that's number one, take care of yourself. Number two is go easy on your spouse. As I said, your financial well-being isn't the only thing at risk right now. So is your marriage. Professor Warren points out, if your family is like most, your marriage may be more vulnerable right now than at any other time in your life. Except for financial problems that can and do destroy marriages, people would say we had a really great relationship. It was almost perfect. Money is the only thing that we ever argued about, but that was enough to ruin the best friendship I ever had. It's very common that husbands feel ashamed by their inability to provide for the family, and wives may feel overburdened by the demands of the bill collectors, the bosses, the children. Remember, first and foremost, is that we are human beings and we are here to help each other. Being kind is really a simple thing, and it's something we can do every single day to ourselves and with those around us, particularly those who we truly love. In a marriage, when the money goes south, you're both under enormous strain. Right at that time, taking it out on each other will only make things worse. It's also important that you recognize that you're not alone. There are millions of families in situations not too different from your own. They worked hard, tried to provide for their families, and ended up in financial hell. You may not know it, but scattered among the folks in your grocery store, your PTA, your church, your synagogue, and even your family are men and women just like you, people who have done their best for their families and who are now in financial collapse. In other words, you really are in good company. But most importantly, you need to recognize that you should never do anything to exacerbate, worsen the situation by taking on the blame and the guilt and the heavy stress that has wrongly gotten associated with debt problems. Just to repeat myself, be kind to yourself, to your spouse, and put the situation into perspective. In many, if not most cases, you have been somewhat victimized by the nefarious credit industry. So do not let them blame the victim. When that stress starts dissipating, you will begin to see more clearly. You will be stronger, and you will find a very significant way to get out of the problem. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And I've been speaking about how the house is already on fire. People are in extremis regarding debt. What Professor Warren points out is that you need to hold on to your treasures, too, during this time. The greatest danger for a family in financial distress is not the bill collectors, like we sometimes think and many people experience, because they can be the most annoying people that you ever come across. But as I have highlighted and emphasized a lot in the past, the greatest danger is a sense of false optimism. We all in this bankruptcy profession heard it over and over again in our careers. We thought John would be back at work right away. I thought that I could work things out with my husband after we were separated for a little time. We didn't think that Grandpa was going to go on like this much longer. These are families that knew that they had been hit by a real and substantial disaster, but they didn't respond fast enough because they thought it would also pass quickly. This is the deadly trick about a financial crisis. It is nearly always impossible to predict when it will end. And we've been in this now for what, 2-3 years, where we've gone down as a collective and we're hearing every day about how this positive thing is happening, that positive thing is happening. And then you look actually at the statistics, more people are losing their homes, more people are unemployed, more people are losing their investments, all in the middle class and down. Not at the upper class, but that's actually what's being reflected a lot in the media. The rich get richer, skimming off of the livelihood and lifeblood of the middle class and down. For families already in trouble, now is always the time to plan for the worst, just in case the bad news doesn't get any better. One needs to face this reality directly. Turn off the phone, ignore the mail, and pop in a video for the kids. Or nowadays it's DVDs, but something very uplifting, I hope. Because it's really time for some cold, hard calculations. As Professor Warren puts it, a family facing a financial crisis should think like a family in a war. You must concentrate on preserving what matters most, and you must let the other things go. I repeat that. What matters most, we put our attention on. We let the other things go. When the trouble comes, you ask the central question: which of your assets do you most want to hold on to? Maybe it's your car, your home, or your health insurance policy. Decide which things you value most and pay those bills first. It doesn't matter who else is making demands on your resources or what they are threatening you with. Once you're in trouble, you will need to fight, and you should be fighting for the things you care about, not trying to satisfy the loudest or most aggressive creditor. Another big point, and it's really probably the most important point, is do not, under any circumstances, put those assets at risk. You will be bombarded by offers to lower your monthly payments, by taking out a second mortgage, or cashing out the equity from your home. I've said this emphatically in the past. Do not do this. Do not get seduced into this wrong financial thinking. Refinancing the home to pay down other bills is the single biggest mistake made by families in trouble. And actually, a lot of what we see in the foreclosure onslaught now is because of this very situation. The mortgage companies and even some financial advisors may tell you it is savvy to replace your high interest credit card debt with low interest mortgage debt. But if you are in financial trouble, you will probably be steered into a high cost subprime type mortgage, making any gains illusory. And this is still happening. Worst of all, you will be jeopardizing the roof over your family's head. Take a moment to consider. Do you honestly believe those low monthly payments are a free gift? Not a chance. If the mortgage lender gives you a lower rate than the credit card company, it is because the mortgage lender gets something in return. And you know what that is? That's the right to push you into the street, seize your home and sell it, and basically suck up any equity that was there. Not a good response to your financial crisis. It will just add dramatically to a problem that you are trying to solve. If your troubles get bad enough, you can always file for bankruptcy to eliminate your high-interest credit cards and cash advances, but bankruptcy cannot help with a home equity loan or a refinanced mortgage. You must pay the mortgage lender in full, plus all penalties, late fees, and interest, or face foreclosure. The chance to save a few dollars a month on your credit card bills is not worth running the risk that you won't have a place to live. And yet, we have seen an epidemic of this happening across the country over the last 3 or 4 years. So really be savvy. Don't refinance the home, or for that matter, don't do this automobile title loans, which often is a high rate of interest and will create a situation in which you wind up without your car. In essence, you need to plan strategically. If the bills keep piling up, you need to take a realistic look at your overall situation. Can you pay off your debts in the next 2 years? If the answer is no, talk to an attorney, read a good book about your legal options, and look into filing bankruptcy. But you have to be very aware that bankruptcy is essentially a one-time option that will not be available again for 8 years for a liquidation kind of bankruptcy, and 4 years if you file a Chapter 7 liquidation first, and then would file a Chapter 13 later, which is a repayment plan type of bankruptcy. The situation is that once you file for bankruptcy, you must recognize that you are limited in the near future. And in this regard, a very critical point is that if at all possible, you really wait until you're at the bottom of the trough, the crisis is about to pass and has passed, and you're heading out of the low point before declaring bankruptcy. In other words, if you are out of work, you wait until you have found a new job. If you have a child who is seriously ill, wait until he is better and the health insurance has paid what it owes. It can be extremely tough to hold on that long, especially if collection notices are stacking up and creditors are calling you every single day and every single night and on the weekends. But if you wait, you minimize the risk that you will once again find yourself buried in debt after you file for bankruptcy. The bankruptcy system gives you a rare opportunity for a second chance. People do it, but it's not comfortable having to wait that long. So wait until the worst is over to file. Once your problems are gone, you give yourself the best odds of getting exactly what you need from the bankruptcy judge, which is what we call the fresh start. And we'll look more into the whole bankruptcy guilt-free default issue next week, and the concept of reaffirming debt and reassuming old debts that were discharged by the courts. Not a good idea. Many people don't understand their rights and get suckered into doing things that essentially take away the benefit of the bankruptcy in some areas. So we'll discuss that more next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.